Walter Russell was a polymath, right? So he was a phenomenal musician, great organist, composer, worked as an architect. A lot of the skyscrapers in New York are actually his. He designed those. So he did things at a really large scale, and he tutored Nobel Prize winning physicists and chemists, and he came up with an entirely different periodic table of the elements, which actually is the only one I would ever let be hung in my lab, because it, in my estimation, is correct, as opposed to the Mendeleev periodic table of the elements, which is, it does have merit in some senses, but typically my estimation of things is nature is pretty efficient. And Walter Russell's periodic table, there really aren't any exceptions. Everything is based on frequencies and harmonics and vibrations, and it works. And Mendeleev's has so many exceptions. You know, we'll do one thing like this, but then there's an exception for this, and it doesn't really fit here, and it goes there. Nature typically doesn't work like that, and if you have to do that sort of stuff, it just means you didn't quite get it right.
Are you ready to take control of your health in today's toxic world? Look no further. Masterpiece is here, setting the gold standard for holistic detoxification. Masterpiece, the natural master binder, features nano-sized zeolites combined with marine plasma nutrition. And here's the groundbreaking news. In initial trial results, users have experienced an astonishing 80% removal of toxins after just 60 days of use. Say goodbye to forever chemicals and heavy metals. Masterpiece is a game changer, efficiently capturing graphene oxide, arsenic, mercury, and over 85 other heavy metals. Not to mention, it tackles forever chemicals like microplastics and PFAS, a group of over 4,700 man-made chemicals lurking in everyday products. Users are reporting incredible benefits, more energy, heightened mental clarity, and better sleep. One user happily explained, "The mental fog is just gone." And the best part, Masterpiece is affordable. For just $52.99, you get a 2-month supply that can transform your life. Visit sarahwestall.com under shop or click the link below to grab yours today. Don't keep this breakthrough to yourself. Spread the word to family and friends. Masterpiece is not just a product, it's a life changer. Act fast and get yours today at sarahwestall.com or with the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have my friend, one of my favorite scientists, Ian Mitchell, coming back to the program. And we are going to be talking about who the heck Walter Russell was. And Walter Russell, just to give you an overview, Tesla said his technology was 1,000 years in the future, and we need to, he's like, he's scared. We can't have this right now. And Einstein is like, I wish I would have paid attention to him, because he really has some stuff here. And, you know, people question what Einstein's science was, but still he admitted that, wow, at the end of his life, he's somebody that I should have been listening to. But Walter Russell came up with the new periodic table that most scientists I know who I talk to is like, oh, this is so much better. And it's based on a mathematical system versus the one that most people use today, or a lot of the top scientists don't. They use the chemical, the one that you see and you learn in school is based on chemicals, and it's not really precise. So it works most of the time, but not all the time. And, you know, it's kind of like a trying to put a circle in a square peg. Well, most of the material would go in, but it misses the outer stuff, right? And that's why this other periodic table, just it's mathematically based, it's more precise, it works. And so people use this. So we're going to talk about that. It's really fascinating. And then we're going to talk about, I love him because he's a chief scientist with Leela, with the quantum. So he really understands that stuff, but he has his own laboratory and works with many people. He's worked with NASA. He's like the insider's guy. So all these people at the forefront of, you know, the biohacking and all that stuff, they listen to him and talk to him. He's that kind of guy. That's why I love him. And so he has his own lab. And he's like, when he heard about the methylene blue, he's like, oh, wait a minute. I think I can fix this product. Hey, and he tried to get these other, he didn't want to do it himself. And he was trying to get these people to change it so it'll work better. And nobody wanted to do it because they were making all this money and no one wanted to do it. And so he's like, okay, well, I'm just going to do it. And then, so that's what we have. MitoCure RX, which is what it does is it uses the methylene blue, because methylene blue gives you energy in your cell. And it's not like caffeine that is just temporary, or it masks it. You feel more energy, but it masks it. Methylene blue actually gives you energy in your cell, but it's temporary. It's not a permanent. So if you want to feel like that, you have to take it forever. And that's not, I don't want stuff like, I want things that'll really help people get better. And so what he's doing is he's promoting the replication, the turnover of your mitochondria, so that your cells are getting healthy. He's going to explain the whole thing. So your cells are getting healthier. And with the methylene blue, so you get that immediate burst of energy, but then he also does that cell replication. And so over time, you don't have to take this darn thing. It's pretty expensive. And so you don't want to be addicted to another product. And I got to tell you, if you're not, don't have that much energy, maybe you have, get these heavy metals out of your body, do the parasite deal, make sure you're eating healthier, deal with your EMS, and maybe that's your problem. But regardless, this will help with energy, and it'll help with, so you might want to do this anyways because of the mitochondria turnover. So he'll explain all that. And if you're interested in trying it, it's less expensive than most. That's the other thing I really like. He's not, even though it's expensive, it's not as expensive as what this other methylene blue is at most outlets. So anyways, you can get it by going to sarahwestall.com under shop or with the link below. And I highly recommend that you try this, especially if you're just taking methylene blue. I think you'd do yourself a favor to do your body differently, so you're trying to get to the source of the problem instead of being addicted to something for the rest of your life. I just don't like that. And so I love these innovations that are actually trying to solve some of these problems. Okay, so let's get into this fantastic conversation that I have with my friend, Ian Mitchell. Hi, Ian. Welcome back to the program.
Hey Sarah, good to be back.
Well, you
Always
are.
good.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you back. This is a good one. Yeah, it's always a good one having you back. You're one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. So this is really exciting. But we are going to talk about another ultra genius that Tesla himself thought was even beyond where he was at, and that's Walter Russell. And I know you've been studying his work and actually have implemented some of his work and things. Who the heck is this guy, and why did Tesla revere him so much? And actually, Tesla was a little bit scared of his technology and his understanding. Who is this guy?
So he was, in my opinion, he's actually kind of my favorite polymath ever. So polymath is just somebody who's kind of an expert across multiple domains. And Walter Russell was a polymath, right? So he was a phenomenal musician, great organist, composer, worked as an architect. A lot of the skyscrapers in New York are actually his. He designed those. So he did things at a really large scale, and he tutored Nobel Prize-winning physicist and chemist, and he came up with an entirely different periodic table of the elements, which actually is the only one I would ever let be hung in my lab because it, in my estimation, is correct as opposed to the Mendeleev periodic table of the elements, which is, it does have merit in some senses, but typically, my estimation of things is nature is pretty efficient, and Walter Russell's periodic table, there really aren't any exceptions. Everything is based on frequencies and harmonics and vibrations, and it works. And Mendeleev's has so many exceptions. You know, we'll do one thing like this, but then there's an exception for this, and it doesn't really fit here, and it goes there. Nature typically doesn't work like that, and if you have to do that sort of stuff, it just means you didn't quite get it right. It's honestly, that classification system is good and handy, and you can develop with it, but it's a lot like grouping things by saying, oh, well, these flowers are all red, so they're all the same, as opposed to looking at the genus and species.
Yes.
And so it's a good blush, but it's not really accurate. Walter Russell, on the other hand, looked at it from an entirely different perspective and kind of approached it from frequencies and how frequencies would interact with one another as they moved along harmonics. And that works. It's a better estimation, you know. And Tesla even said that, you know, if you want to understand the universe, think of it in terms of frequencies and vibrations. And, you know,
And
that's basically
he said that if you, the moment we do that, we'll have more advances in the next 10 years than you had in all the centuries combined. That
I
was
think
Tesla's
that's very
quote.
true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And right now we're at a point where we very legitimately could do that. You know, if you start looking at what we're doing with quantum computing and how that actually works, I mean, really, every bit of quantum computing is looking at things that are happening because of superposition, right? So it's a wave function and it's probabilistic collapse into a point function, right? So, and all of that allows us to do things that normally you couldn't do, but much in keeping with nature kind of wearing it best. Like I always joke about like everything being the contest of who wore it best. Nature. Nature always wore it best, right? You want cloud storage? Nature already does cloud storage. You know, you want quantum computing? Nature already does quantum computing, but it does it at room temperature in living systems. You know, I mean, it's actually, it doesn't have to be cool to, you know, a couple hundred degrees below zero. It can do it in a room without any, you know, pomp and circumstance. It just does it. But you give a system, you know, infinite trying, you know, capacity and power in time, and it'll figure things out, even if it gives an infinitesimally small advantage. Hence, you look at olfaction, any of the quantum biological functions, like how does chlorophyll produce energy, right? It actually uses quantum functions to collapse waveforms to see what is going to be the absolute most efficient way to generate energy from a photon. And then once it's identified the best pathway, it collapses said function and runs the photons along that path. So it'll run kind of an assessment of five different pathways, if you will. And then whichever one is the most efficient, it then collapses it and the photons move on that pathway. That's, you know, quantum biology and application. And it's all around us all the time. It just, it's, and I know I've said this to you before, it's like there's this Far Side cartoon with these two sharks swimming and they're coming up to a beach and all the people are running and scattering up on the beach. And one shark looks over at the other one and goes, "Dude, your dorsal fin is sticking up. I wonder how long that's been screwing things up for us." And it's kind of like in science, it's kind of like that. Like we see these things and we're like, "Oh my God, this is brilliant. Like how long has this been there?" Like case in point, carbon 60, right? That's kind of like the bailiwick of a lot of the research I've been doing for the past decade, actually more than a decade now. And that, you know, it was discovered in 1985. Well, right, but it's 13.8 billion years old, as you know, has been seen by, you know, kind of looking at things in outer space with telescopes. We can find traces of that 13.8 billion years ago. We discovered it as people, but nature obviously did this way yeah, long ago, you know, and that's just kind of how it rolls. So in terms of what Walter Russell did and who he is, around the turn of the last century and a little bit before, kind of the late 1800s, early 1900s, he was the presidential portrait artist. So he was an incredibly good artist. And I would recommend to anybody, look up Walter Russell's art and look up Walter Russell's sculptures. He did photorealistic artwork, and which is incredibly good as it pertains to what he did later in the sciences, because he was able to very demonstrably show how things functioned and graphically represent them in ways that are super, super accurate. He did drawings about magnetic lines of force without being able to image them the way that we can now. They're all spot on. He nailed it. I mean, it's wow, truly remarkable how accurate the guy was without having any of the technology mm-hmm. to be able to image it. Whatever he was tapping into to get his perceptions really, really crystal clear, it was working, because the drawings that he did over 100 years ago are as accurate as anything we can do now. And it's truly just amazing. You know, Tesla said when he wrote his book, this one, the Universal One, he sent the book out to the top 1,000 scientists in the world. And the only person who responded was Tesla. And Tesla said, "You need to lock this information up for 1,000 years because humanity isn't ready for it." And I would agree, actually. I think a lot of the technology in there is...
And why? Let's talk about that, because that's what I think... I have this theory that that's what DARPA and all this black money and all this stuff, that's what they're working on. They're using his technology.
That's very plausible, because I mean, even if it's not that they're using stuff from him directly, I think, you know, we're all playing by the same rules in terms yep. of the physical world. So if one guy just happens to figure it out, if the other people are pulling the thread and they're agnostic about where the information takes them, they'll arrive at the same conclusion. They may not be as adept or as sure. gifted intellectually as he was, and may not be able to see the connections, but ultimately I think they'll arrive at the same point. And especially if you throw, you know, billions of dollars at something.
That's right.
I've done things using his diagrams. I've done things here in the lab that I thought were pretty remarkable. So the idea of an M drive, if you're familiar with that, mm-hmm. which is basically a propulsionless, you know, it's a propulsion system without any propellant being expelled from the unit. And it's completely workable, works like a champ. people have a hard time replicating it because they're missing a couple of the fundamental principles. It's if you pay attention to Walter Russell's stuff, every bit of it's completely spelled out. I built one, worked like a champ. But after I was done building it, I realized the potential for weaponizing it was extreme. So I disassembled it and scattered all the parts so that it could not be reassembled. And that's, that's, I don't want to live my life, kind of in the Alfred Nobel framework where,
You don't want to be Oppenheimer.
yeah, no, it's, spending your life like Nobel trying to get your name associated to something other than, killing lots of people with explosives, I mean, nowadays, and it worked actually, you go forward 100 and something years and most people don't realize they'll know the Nobel Prize, but they won't realize, kind of the atrocities that were laying the pay the pay or laying the groundwork for him to be able to have the Nobel Prize. History kind of washes away a lot of things over time. But Russell's work, it allows you to see things in a different framework. And when you start to look at the interactions of things, it makes sense. Like the M drive, case in point. People think that that is, it's called, a lot of times it's called the impossible engine because they say it violates Newtonian physics. It doesn't actually. It really doesn't. You just have to rewrite some of the formulas. And once you rewrite some of the formulas, it makes perfect sense and works like a champ every single time. But there are certain things that just aren't taken into account with the way most physics is taught. But Russell caught it. Luckily enough, I had his work as crib notes, so I could look at it and it made sense to me. And so I was able to do it and replicate it and test it. And I think I'm sure I'm not alone. There are probably lots of other people out there. And like you said, if I can figure it out in my little, podunk lab in Oklahoma, I have no doubt that the guys at DARPA that are,
That's
doing
right.
really cool stuff with really big fat budgets, they've probably got some awesome technology, just some really gangbuster stuff that would, I would go crazy like a kid in a candy store over.
Well, yeah, it's just whether it's weaponized and you being used against us and or for pro-humanity. And that's where I put the stop sign on and say, okay, I think that they're weaponizing a lot of stuff. 'Cause we can cure cancer, we can do all these. We should be living a lot longer. We shouldn't be toxic. We could cure cancer. There's so many things that we can do. But I look back and say, okay, we are in this unit math matrix, right? It's what this quantum stuff is. It's what Sherry Edwards talks about. She can see the whole math matrix. It's what you're working with. This math matrix, this that we're part of, when Neo says, what is the matrix? That's actually true. I mean, that's real. We are in this. And they're trying, if you tap directly into that, that's the most cleanest route. Like whenever you're trying to solve a problem, the cleanest route is the most efficient, right? It's the fastest, cleanest, most effective. And they're starting to figure out how to manipulate and tap right into that matrix. So
Well, my
go ahead.
experience with this is that anytime I have an idea or ask a question, usually almost all the stuff I'm doing is literally trying to kind of benefit and move us forward as a species. So I think I have luck on my side or, good fortune just because I'm trying to do it for a positive outcome. So I think a lot of doors open. But I am also acutely aware of the fact that when an idea's time is ripe, it comes out. And it doesn't come out just to one person. The idea is very clearly out in, the ether, or, floating around in kind of the collective consciousness. And it's time for that idea to be present. And so I think the people with the technical prowess to understand and possibly get it out are the ones who see it, and because I've read papers and patents from people where I 100% guarantee we had the same thought at the same time. It's because I had no contact with them. They had no contact with me. We were running perfectly parallel tracks. We were doing the exact same thing with the exact same approach. And the you could say, yeah, you guys are really smart guys, and it came out of this. No, I can tell you from being the person that it's coming through, that's not how it's working. It's like a pressure center. We think that the wind blows, right? We say, oh, the wind is blowing. It's not actually accurate. It's not blowing. There's a low pressure center, and it's being pulled into a low pressure center.
Experience the groundbreaking advancements of Leela's quantum technology, now backed by over 40 placebo-controlled studies conducted by elite institutions and renowned universities worldwide. This revolutionary technology surpasses previous achievements, as confirmed by prestigious organizations such as the Emoto Institute in Japan. Scientific investigations reveal that Leela's technology not only enhances blood health and circulation, but also neutralizes the adverse effects of electromagnetic fields, expedites wound healing, and elevates ATP production in human cells. Embrace the extraordinary benefits of Leela's tech as recognized and utilized by world-class athletes, esteemed functional medicine practitioners, and leading figures in the field of biohacking. Explore a range of transformative products from the Heal capsule, shielding you from harmful EMFs, to the Quantum Block, allowing you to infuse frequencies into your cherished possessions. Dive into the realm of innovation and wellness at sarahwestall.com/shop or by following the link below.
I think humanity as a whole, we think we're pushing forward and going up this mountain and growing and progressing. I don't actually think that's the case. I think we're being drawn to it, and we're expanding as we're drawn to it. And the expansion is meant to happen at a certain clip. And so we're drawn into that expansion and given the tidbits as we need them to grow and expand. I don't think we're so great that we're coming up with all of this on our own. I think it really is something that we're kind of led into and is opened up to us. But in my experience personally of having the same ideas as someone else, there's a fellow that works for the Navy named Salvatore Pais, P-A-I-S. And I've read his patents, and they're great. Like, some of those things are, I mean, I've literally come up with the exact same thing. Obviously, I've never met the guy, but somebody sent me one of his patents, and I read it and thought, damn, that guy's spot on. That's exactly how you do that. And I had the concept, but it wasn't something I had the bandwidth to actually get out. Obviously, that guy did, and with the backing of the Department of the Navy, he's probably got the budget to get it out too. But it's just, for me personally, I can look at that and say, okay, great. If I don't have the bandwidth to get this idea out and it needs to come to fruition, someone is going to get it out. And to the point of the Matrix, I think it really is more of a collective construct that's more linked and interconnected than we would like to think, because it starts to, when the lines of the persona of you as Sarah and me as Ian kind of start to break down, and you realize, like, oh, we're really probably a lot more one thing that appears to be multiple things, it starts to get a little strange. You know, it's a little more intractable puzzle, you know, because when all those borders go away, I think people have a hard time dealing with the confines of normal reality. Like, for me personally, a lot of those barriers are down. And so the idea of hurting someone or doing something to harm someone is stupid. Like, it doesn't even compute, because you'd literally just be hurting yourself. And I can't quite fathom why you would do that. But I can see, you know, conversely, if you really registered things as being separate from yourself and distinctly separate, yeah, well, sure, then you vie for yourself and you create problems and you try and do the Malthusian thing where you take every bit of, you know, the pie that you can, because there's supposedly a finite amount of resources. I think that's utter bullshit. I just think anybody who thinks that is not really paying attention and not thinking clearly. Like, on our planet, for instance, right now, there is an ample supply of food and enough tech to do clean water without any issues. It's just literally a batch resource allocation problem. And the only reason it doesn't work the way that it should work is just because of monetary interest, right? And that's, you know, in the monetary interest play out as political interests. Like, I still think, and we've talked about this, I still think that the system of governance that's really in place around the world isn't, you know, democracies, communist regimes. It's mercantile feudalism. It's the same thing it's been for the past 10,000-ish years, right? Since agriculture came into being, we basically are subject to the whim of the people who control the flow of goods and resources, right? The largest merchants in the world. Now, is, you know, we've talked about, that's energy, technology, pharmaceuticals. Those are the things that really govern the flow of all the other goods and resources. And as such, we're kind of at the whimsy of those people. And I mean, I know you fight all the time trying to kind of pull the veil back so people can see that.
Well, and make sure that, and try to get people to be aware of it so that we guide ourselves in a pro-human fashion and don't cut our own throats. You know, hello. I mean, we don't have to operate like this, right? There's other ways that we can operate. But you have done such amazing work, and I want to get into some of this because I'm really, you know, 2024 is a year of change for me personally, and I think for a lot of people. People are going through a lot of change. And for me, I just want to focus on innovation. I think innovation is what's going to get us out of this mess that we're in.
Agree.
Thinking
I
differently, innovating
agree.
ourselves out of this, right? And you have some things that you're working on that I am so excited about because I think it's going to help humanity a lot. Can we talk about, let's talk about the methylene blue, but you didn't just use that methylene blue. You said, okay, methylene blue is okay, but it really doesn't solve any core problems. And you say, okay, in order to fix this, we got to do some things to it. Talk about what you've done because it blows out of the water what others are out there doing.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. The timing on this is funny because this morning we've had a mad run on the new product that came out, and I made it. I literally made this stuff because I wanted it for myself. I went to the company that was kind of the main company that does these things and said, "Listen, here's a better formula. If you guys will produce this, that would be awesome." Because I actually used their product. And they had no interest in doing that because they were, I think, making money hand over fist, just doing the same old, same old, which is fine, no harm, no foul. But if somebody walks up and says, "Look, biochemically speaking, this is a much better solution. Do this, it'll help people a lot more," you'd think it'd kind of be incumbent upon you to actually take that as a gift and just run with it. Because I really didn't want anything other than to have access to it so I could use it. And again, they had no interest. So I said, "Okay, fine, I'll just do it myself." So basically, what this is it's a combination of methylene blue, which is, for those of you who don't know, an industrial dye that's been around since 1876. So it's one of the principal things that's used in commercial industrial setups for dyeing fabrics and stuff like that. But it's also used biologically. Like, we use it in the lab because you can stain cells with it. And it's incredibly good at staining cells and cell nuclei because it passes through cell membranes really, really easily. And it's got, oddly, about 100% biodistribution. So it's one of the few things that just poof, spreads in your entire system the moment you introduce it. But it's an electron donor and acceptor, very much like carbon-60, right? And so it can both accept and donate. And that allows for really kind of interesting properties for diffusion into the cells. And that's part of the reason that it gets such good bioavailability and biodistribution. But what I used it for is I wanted to trigger kind of a shift, a quick spike up in energy levels, and combine it with a thing called urolithin A. Urolithin A triggers a function called mitophagy. So in our cells, we have this autophagy is the process where your body goes in and find what cells are damaged, and then uses macrophages and eats them and breaks them up, and then cycles the components and makes new healthy cells. Well, inside the cells, you have a process called mitophagy. And so your body does the same thing. It looks for energetic levels inside the mitochondria and says, "Oh, this mitochondria is down, eliminate it and produce a new one." Which is a great process because a lot of my work over the past couple of years, once I had COVID twice, and I know you know this because we're friends, but my heart, I got myocarditis exceedingly badly. It was a bad shot. And I went from being really athletic to literally not being able to walk half a block before I'd have to take a knee and sit down and catch my breath. And so it was a kind of a process of figuring out, okay, what's going on? Well, one of the things that was happening was deprotonation inside the mitochondria. And so that basically means that if you have something that's replicating inside your mitochondria, it's bleeding energy off so that it can make more copies of the virus in that case. And it leaves you energetically depressed. So that what I found was those things were kind of persistent. And even though it wasn't expressing with a full viral load, there were still a lot of little things where I was being kind of energetically dropped. And you could see that because the points of mitochondrial density in a person's body, and I'm sure everybody knows, but mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell. And so the points of mitochondrial density in a human are heart, then brain, then eyes, with the exception of women, where it's ovaries by a factor of 20, right? So normally your cardiac cells have about 5,000 mitochondria per cell, but the ovaries have 100,000 per cell. So when you have something that triggers a viral load that's persistent, a lot, say like long COVID kind of a thing, which was my personal experience. And even though I wasn't acute, I still had this stuff lingering and damaging me. Well, it was because it was deprotonating the mitochondria, and hence I was energetically depressed. Well, for me, it was a cardiac issue because that was the point of highest mitochondrial density. For a lot of women, it triggered things, you know, like, you know, going into early menopause and things with hair loss, all the functions that would be related to kind of your endocrine system as it relates to reproduction, right? Because those systems are all linked. And so when those signals get kind of thrown off, your body goes, oh my gosh, we're old now. We don't have enough energy. We are at this level energetically, which means we need to shut down reproduction, which means, you know, all the cascading things, like it's going to be harder to have kids. It's, you know, you're going to start having a little hair loss.
It's the reproductive issues we're seeing.
That's exactly it. But it's because of a correlation with highest points of mitochondrial density. So in a woman, with it being that high and those being the things that are hit, if you've got something that's triggering mitochondrial issues, well, the first thing that's going to have a problem is the points of highest mitochondrial density. So for women, yeah, you're going to have a huge run on reproductive issues, endocrine system disorders and disruptions. And that's the kind of thing. So as a byproduct of me trying to, you know, basically scratch my own itch and figure out how to fix myself up, one of the things I wanted to do was cycle mitochondria. So I had started taking urolithin A, and urolithin A is great because it triggers mitophagy. So when I was thinking myself through kind of like, how best do I structure this stuff to really have an impact? The thought was, well, okay, if I create a contrast using methylene blue, because a lot of people sell methylene blue at the same dose that, you know, I have one dose in this compound. That's the whole thing. It's just methylene blue at this rate because it gives you a boost of energy. And it does, but
it's temporary, right? It just gives you a temporary boost and it doesn't change anything. Okay.
No,
people feel like it's doing something, but it's not.
It's like caffeine, right? You get this, you know, and caffeine's a little different because it's just an adenosine binder. So you don't actually feel fatigued, even though you really are fatigued. Methylene blue does actually give you energy. So it enhances the mitochondrial electron transport chain. So you actually do get better energy, but it's transient and it's going to go and then it's going to go away. You know, you're going to get up, then you're going to go down. And I thought, well, that's cool and all, but if I leverage this so that I can boost the contrast by showing more energy, then your body will see which ones can actually work and which ones aren't. And with the urolithin present, it's going to trigger mitophagy. So it's kind of a signal to noise thing. So you can see more readily which ones need to be cleaned out. And then that your body will clean those out. Then I put another compound in called pyroloquinoline quinone. And PQQ is the acronym. PQQ is, it triggers mitochondrial biogenesis. So it basically makes your body cycle new mitochondria in more rapidly. And it increases the density of the mitochondria. So you end up, let's say, just for sake of random numbers, you take out one damaged mitochondria and then your body replaces it with 1.2 new healthy mitochondria or 1.3 new healthy mitochondria. Well, those numbers don't sound really impressive until you say, well, you actually have 4 trillion mitochondria. So if you can cycle through those things and take out a fraction of the damaged ones and replace them with just a slight hair more, overall, it's a huge boost. And you end up with, you know, potentially hundreds of millions, if not billions, of new mitochondria that you didn't even have before. So the one-to-one replacement being exceeded even by a small fraction makes a huge difference. And the benefit is, long-term, you have so much more power, right? You actually have more power generation systems and you can distribute higher power. So for me, because I play with C60 all the time and I'm actually trying to amp up the system, this is perfect because it literally creates more mitochondria. So when you allow those to run more efficiently via the C60, you elevate the entire system. And the other thing is methylene blue also triggers a transient drop in nitric oxide synthase, which is that's what your body uses to make nitric oxide, which kind of loosens the vascularity, kind of the smooth muscle inside your system so that you have nitric oxide perfusion and basically your blood flows more effectively. That's what a lot of times for people with erectile dysfunction, they take nitric oxide because it vasodilates you and you can get, you know, blood flow to places that you want blood flow. Actually, it's great just to take it all the time anyway, because it increases your mental capacity, because your brain is an insanely resource consumptive beast in terms of oxygen. You know, your brain weighs 2% of your body mass, but consumes 20 to 25% of all your body's oxygen. So opening it up and vasodilating things with nitric oxide is great, because you get a better supply of blood to all the places you want it. So to combat that shift, I put in citrulline and arginine, which is one is kind of a precursor in the cycle. And then one is a byproduct after it, but I put in both so that wherever you had the substrates to trigger nitric oxide formation via the synthase, you could maximize that. And so the transient dip that you would normally get, well, right before that dip happens, you actually get a big spike. So it kind of levels it out. And it's actually net positive, because so I put a lot more in.
So you get, this is the whole point. You get the benefits of the temporary energy boost, but this actually keeps it up there and it turns over your mitochondria. So now you're slowly getting rid of the source problem in the first place.
Yeah. Well, the idea for me is it kind of like it always is. I don't want people to have to take these products forever and a day. The idea is take it for a while, use it, get the benefit of it, put it away, right? It's, you know, I personally, I don't think you should take anything all the time. You know, I mean, I cycle, like I purposely cycle out on C60 and all the things that I think are really intrinsically good. Case in point, I've cycled off for probably over a month now on carbon 60. And one of the things is, I don't know if you can see, but I've got like salt and pepper kind of going on now, where I have little white hairs popping in. And, you know, which is great, because I actually think it's cool, because to me, it's sort of a barometer for how are you doing biologically, right? So if your melanin isn't producing, it means you're getting oxidized, right? Because that's why your hair goes white anyway, is kind of a peroxidation function. And so for me, it's kind of funny, because I'll do this when I cycle off and I'll get the little white hairs popping in my beard. And then when I cycle back on, all that stuff goes away and it all comes back in black. And
well, that's why taking the combination of C60, your methylene blue, and then we have another product we're going to talk about, is so powerful, right? I mean, it's the combination over time that really changes you and your body and how you're feeling.
Yeah. Well, and the point there is to get people healthier, right? Like I'm not going to be able to affect change in Israel and Palestine this morning, but I can probably make people's bodies help, you know, or effectively function better. And so that's kind of my jam. You know, I'm trying to help where I can, and I can help there. May not be able to do much on the other front, but I can help there. So I'll do that. And in thinking through this, I think part of the benefit of this is coming up with things that will have long-term benefit, whether people stay on it or not, right? Like I don't actually want people to do this permanently. I'd like them to spread the word so that everybody does it, but as a kind of a transient function where you do it for a couple months and then you cycle off, because your mitochondria are going to cycle on their own. But if you can create a more robust system that's more finely tuned, that provides you with more power. See, this is kind of my contribution as an overarching theme. I think if I can make people function more effectively biologically, they'll have more energy, they'll have clearer thought, and they'll be happier. Because when you are energetically marginalized, you're bummed out. When you feel sick, that's not when you're like, hey, you know, super happy and chipper. When you feel energized and you're happy and you've got, you know, you've got a good night's sleep and you're ready to rock, that's when you're going to make good calls. That's when you're going to be kind to people. And that wave is going to propagate. True. And so for me, that's kind of my, you know, little boink helping hand with this is I can fix this stuff. I can't fix all the world's ills, but I can definitely fix this. So I'm just going to do my little part and try and, you know, propagate that wave and howdy everybody, you know, just do my little bit of kindness across my one domain.
Well, and how long do you cycle off? You like a month and then go back on? It kind of resets your body. Go ahead.
Yeah. So with the C60, I actually very rarely cycle off. I'll go for actually years. But I'll usually do like as kind of a smaller cycle. I'll do like Monday through Friday, I'll do it. And then Saturday, Sunday, I'll take off. So I'll do like 5 days on, 2 days off. And I found that that's a pretty good cycle. Now you can do lower doses and just stay on it permanently. Like my old partner, Dan. Dan did that. He'd do like half a teaspoon a day and just did it consistently. And it works really well like that. But, I was going for kind of a different effect. He was just, he was much older. So he was kind of trying to just keep a good energy level as a base. And it fixed his arthritis. And so he was kind of just trying to maintain. I wanted really high performance and athletic, prowess. So I was doing, a tablespoon or more a day. And when you're doing that much, because it really handles all the antioxidant load in your body. If you consistently do it, your body being super efficient goes, oh, I don't need to produce antioxidants, so I'm going to shut down production of glutathione and superoxide dismutase. And that's not good. You don't want your body to shut down its own endogenous antioxidant production. So I always tell people just cycle on, 5 days on, 2 days off. And that works with bigger loads.
And you're working with Olympic athletes and all these, and your
Oh, yeah.
athletes
All the time.
aren't like, you were telling me that 9 out of 10 of your athletes are like leading
Oh
the
yeah, no, it
world.
was actually yeah. So at the this was hilarious to me because I was watching it last year and it was so cool. So the CrossFit Games, and CrossFit is kind of like this multidisciplinary thing where they do like weightlifting, but they also do aerobic exercises. And the guys, honestly, they're freakishly fit. Like they are just
Yeah.
abnormal specimens of humans. But it was funny because at the end of the CrossFit Games last year, there were between all the different age groups and genders, I think there were like 13 different first place spots that you could get. And athletes on my Olympic serum took 9 of the 13. So,
That's
and then
just
they were in,
amazing. I mean,
it
that's
really
a
was
huge
actually.
endorsement.
Yeah,
Wow.
it was well, and yeah, and Joshua Alchama, who's the guy that was the head of the team that won first place in the world, he's posting about it because we actually just talked, and he was very flattering about it because it really made a difference. And so he posts about it, and there are a lot of other Samuel Dancer, Sam Dancer. He's a guy who did it, and Sam actually he was the first person in CrossFit to really give it a whirl, and he called me the very first day he tried it because he called because we have a mutual friend, and he said, "Hey, is this legal?" And I said, "Yeah, why do you ask?" And he said, "Well, today is my first day. I took a tablespoon of this stuff and I ran my fastest run time ever, like ever in my life. And I put up lifts that I haven't been able to do for 7 to 10 years." And he said, "So I don't know what's going on, but this is crazy." And he was, of course, he was one of the guys that took first place. And because at CrossFit, this is so ridiculous to me, but your last year of competition as an actual athlete in the main games is 34. At 35, you're considered in the masters. So
And how old is he?
he turned 35. So he took first place in the 35 to 40 men's
Okay.
competition. Yeah. And but his numbers and times, I mean, here's a guy who deadlifts like 600 pounds or something.
Gosh.
And yeah, I mean, like it's like the Incredibles where you do train car pulls. I mean, it's just like kind of ridiculous how strong these guys are. But yeah, I mean, it
Wow.
makes a huge difference. Well, and that's all just a function of muscle recruitment, right? So it's not actually making them stronger. It's making them stronger by virtue of how much muscle recruitment they can use. So normally, not to digress into that, but just as kind of a quick explanation, normally your brain downregulates your muscular capacity to about 25 to 30% of what it actually is. And you do that so that if you're in a fight or flight situation, your body engages everything. So like Nat Geo did a thing a couple years back, and they were looking at human performance and what was possible. And one of the examples they had was a mountain climber who had been climbing, and a rock literally came down on him that weighed 1,200 pounds, and he landed on a decline and was starting to slide back, and he had a 1,200 pound boulder on his chest, and he was looking over as he was headed down this decline, and he knew that if he went over the edge, it was a couple hundred foot drop, he was done. He bench pressed and threw the boulder off of himself. He tore both pectoralis major muscles, right? The chest muscles both split. But this skinny mountain climber guy bench pressed 1,200 pounds, which should tell us that when your body kicks in every fiber that it has and recruits them all with, norepinephrine and everything and adrenaline bumping up, you have a lot more power than you think you have, right? You can do a whole lot more.
So basically, the key to getting to the most peak performance without steroids or something is to focus as much of your energy, and the ones that do that the best are the ones who can perform it, because it's the difference in performance at that high level is so small. And so those who can focus that energy the best are the ones who end up.
Yeah, well, think of a mom lifting a car off of a kid,
Sure,
right?
yeah.
They're one, they're zapped up on adrenaline, but two, they have a singular purpose, right? I'm going to get the car off of my baby, period, dot. They're not thinking about, did I brush my teeth? Did I leave the keys in? But they don't care. They're
They're
doing one
freaked
singular,
out. They're
right? And so,
completely focused. Yeah.
yeah, and so when you provide a signal that's absolutely clear to your muscular system, it will respond, but normally your brain doesn't let you do that. So when you take this particular serum, what it does is it actually allows a bit of a bypass on that, so you have higher skeletal muscle recruitment. So instead of just, and it's a dose dependent function. It was actually, there was a Russian paper on it that I read years and years ago, and it was super precipitation of skeletal muscle actomyosin, VSC60. And basically that's the fancy way of saying that in this dose-dependent function, you could super precipitate. You could get more of the fibers to engage if you have a higher amount of C60 to get the signal across. So you take more of that, and it got the signal across. And so it is a dose-dependent thing, because during the games, a lot of the guys were texting me that they were taking, you know, 2 tablespoons during a
Yeah,
competition,
they
or, you
really pump it up.
know, yeah, they really pump it up. But it worked. You know, one of the people, I thought this was crazy, she texted that she was taking 3 tablespoons right before a competition. Now, she won first place. So, you know, hey, okay. You know, it works. And the thing is, it's also in terms of a power to weight ratio, they're not any heavier. So effectively, they're much stronger, but they're not any heavier. So they have more power. You know, you don't increase your body mass, but you can increase the potential output. And also, and you know this because we've talked about it before, the carbon 60, one of the nifty thing is because of the way it allows the electrons to cycle and doesn't let oxidative stress hit the system mitochondrially, you don't need to do anything more than just take the basic components of it. And all these serums are actually well beyond this, but just the basic component of the carbon 60, in that case, olive oil blend, gives you about a 30% on average bump. Like the low end we tested was 18%, the high end was 58.3%. Just that gave that much of a boost in ATP production because it simply eliminated oxidative stress. It's not that you're getting more energy, you're just simply more efficient and you're not losing it. So it was
That makes
always there.
sense.
We just squandered it. And so all
So,
that simply does is block the loss.
do you have C60 in the blue product, or do you have it? People should take both because it's
I
just,
think
and you
people should.
can't synthesize. Well, thing is, it's not always good to synthesize things together. You have to take them separately, right?
Yeah,
Because
well, and that's the thing. I mean, yeah, otherwise I'd just make one giant football sized pill. You
that's what
take
I
it up.
mean. It
Yeah,
becomes too much. Yeah.
it's as it stands, I have like this ridiculous thing that, you know, I keep my different pills in that I take throughout the day on a schedule, which is admittedly kind of silly, but you know, it's all things that I know I'm not going to get in my diet,
That's right.
so I actually do take them.
That's so hard. Okay, and before we get into the last thing that deals with the spike protein, I want to ask about viral load, because I know I'm going to get a ton of trolls saying viruses don't exist and blah, blah, blah. And I've had doctors who say that. I say, okay, well, then what's an exosome? And they're like, I've had someone, a doctor, say, okay, you know, one of the ones that are like viruses don't exist, say, okay, well, exosomes are viruses. They admitted that. So what is your view when it comes to viruses versus exosomes? And even Dr. Joe was like, oh, maybe an exosome is a virus. Are you thinking that the exosomes are viruses, or do you, I mean, what is your view on
I
that?
don't actually think of exosomes as viruses. I think is in because I actually purchased like the hair serum that we have, and it's not publicly available for sale, but a lot of people write in and buy it because I've been making it for a long time. I'm kind of on like the fifth generation of that stuff, and it has exosomes in it, right? So I think of them as extracellular growth factors from stem cells because I do a lot of work on stem cells. Like I've done
Yep.
actually, every 10 days, I do a stem cell procedure on myself. And my favorite of those, I don't use, you know, like umbilical or any of that kind of stuff. My favorite is very small embryonic-like stem cells. And that's the ones where you pull blood and then you spin it down and do the separation on the plasma. So you end up with PRP, the platelet-rich plasma. And as it turns out, platelet-rich plasma has a huge amount of these quiescent stem cells in them. So they're there, but they're dormant. And what activates them is some sort of hormetic stress. It can be either like a cold shock, or it can be a vibratory shock, or it can be a collimated light, like a laser. And all of those, so whether it's, photonic or acoustic or mechanical, any of those stressors or thermal, will activate them. And when they turn on, the reason they're called very small embryonic-like is they're embryonic-like in that they're pluripotent. They can differentiate into anything other than a germ cell. But they're about a third of the size. Like a normal stem cell is going to be about 20 microns, 18 to 20 microns. These are going to be like 5 to 7 microns. So they're really, really small, which is awesome because they can roll right past the blood-brain barrier and you can get them up into your noggin and do a lot of regeneration there. So I do that every 10 days, pretty much like clockwork. And one of the things that I do is I buy exosomes from a company that refines exosomes. And I'll pull my own system, activate them with lasers and thermal. So I do a cold shock. So I've got like a cryotherapy that we shock the PRP, and then we use lasers to activate the quiescent cells. So we trigger those, and then we administer 10 billion exosomes into each vial, and then I reinject them in myself. And so I have been using exosomes for a couple of years now, and my understanding of kind of looking at the morphology, like the structure of them, they don't seem to be viral in any way, shape, or form to me. They just seem like extracellular signaling molecules. Now, you could say, I mean, the case could be made that a virus is, in fact, kind of like its own little codified encapsulated system of doing the same thing, providing extracellular information that modifies how things heal and the growth rates. Yeah. But I don't think all things are the same. I think actually exosomes are distinctly different and separate from a virus.
And you've been able to isolate viruses because people say viruses have never been able to be isolated. Do you think that's
Yeah,
wrong?
well, I say that. I've been able to play with them a lot in a lab, but it's kind of interesting. If you really get down to it, and you look at the shape of a virus and what it is, and I mean, honestly, it looks like a little lunar lander in the case of some of the viruses, with basically a hypodermic needle on the bottom. When it lands, it just injects, DNA and information, and that's kind of amazing to me, actually. But yeah, in terms of isolating it, only in so much as it's still inside cells and I'm using infected cells to play with things. I don't know that I can definitively say I've actually isolated it. I think that would be overstating it. I've had infected cells that I've played with that appear to have what I would consider to be a virus. Now, have I actually looked at one up front and close and personal? No, I haven't actually. So I think that would be. I would be misstating it if I said I actually had. Have I purified what I think is there? Yes. Do I think it's virally infected? Yeah, by all measures and tests, and when I run a test to see if it has viral load, yes, it does. And can I do with, antiviral things and, quinolones and chloroquines what I think I'm going to be able to do? Yes. Is there a possibility that it's something entirely different and then I'm just looking at a correlation and not something that is definitively viral? Yeah, that's a distinct possibility.
And
I
that's
mean,
the
I
debate we have to have, right? That's the debate, so that because it gets so stupid now. People know viruses exist and the trolls are saying all this. But it's like,
really,
well, go ahead.
ultimately, yeah, it would be really great to line that out and to figure it out. And I think it is important, but if all of my friends are getting sick and damaged from something and my family is really hurt by something, I don't necessarily care if I get the nomenclature right or if I get it figured
That's
out, as
right.
long as I can solve it and make them better.
That's
So
fair.
in the process of trying to work out solutions to a lot of these things, I've got things that seem to be working really well and helping people, and that's great. Maybe we kind of elucidate what the actual mechanism is over time. Maybe we don't. I mean, I always used to tell my students this, and I talk about this all the time. The best technology that we have now, 1,000 years from now, people will look at it and think it was laughable, and we're silly barbarians. And, you know, I mean, we look back 300-400 years and I crack up when you look at some of the therapeutic things that people did, like, you know, leeches? The best doctors in the world. Oh, not just leeches, but, you know, like it's so preposterous for some of those things. It's like, oh, your leg is wet. We need to amputate. You know, I mean, it's like, it just like, I'm sorry, what? Can't we just dry it off? No, no, cut it off. You know, I mean,
it's like, it's sweating. Like, no. Yeah,
it's like the pinnacle of science at the time. And we look back and go, sweet Jesus, what were you thinking? Like, really? That's what you did? You know, I mean, because you look back pre-von Leeuwenhoek, before we had microbes, and if you said like, oh, you're not being dealt with by evil spirits, it's these little microscopic bugs. They wouldn't have had the term microscopic pre-von Leeuwenhoek anyway, but it's these little bugs that are invisible to the eye and you can't see them. They're running amok through your whole body. People would have gone, right, you're crazy pants.
They did. Burn. They put the guy that was, you know, he was saying all he had to do for delivering babies, I can't remember his name, and he was having, he was washing, he said, just wash your hands, make sure things are clean. And the babies in his clinic, this was in Europe, they were living. I mean, he was, but in other places they were dying, like 25%. The women were dying at 25%, something like that. And he was, and so they all wanted to go to his because, and they ended up institutionalizing him as a crazy nut job because he was talking exactly about what you're talking about. And then they ended up doing what he did and then they ended up saving all these babies.
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't, for me personally, I don't really care if, I mean, a lot of people are going to think I'm stupid and a nut job on a lot of fronts. And that's, and I've talked about this before because I really do. I work, the one thing I do every day, no matter what, if I'm sick, if I'm feeling great, does not matter, is I do mental work every day. Like I actually try and push my brain every day. I do puzzles. I do things that I find really hard because like any other thing, if you want to be strong and adept and have prowess, you got to work for it. And your brain being the system that it is, always looking for kind of this homeostatic balance, it doesn't want to expend a lot of energy to get stronger. It wants to just coast and be chill and be cool where it is.
I want to watch TV and eat my bonbons. Right?
So I push it every day.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things in the process of that, and this was decades ago, but my dad sent me this book on enhancing your genius, and he really is like a super genius. So I listen when he says things. One of the exercises, and I actually did it, was to go into a public place and make loud animal sounds, right? And so I went to a Barnes & Noble in Austin in Westlake and stood there and went, caw-caw, caw-caw, brr, you know, and did like loud animal sounds. And people did. They looked at me like, who is this jackass? What is this guy doing? But what it teaches you, it's kind of like it's a stoic exercise in a sense. They can look at you and think you're a fool, but what harm does that really do to you, right? Nothing. And in the process of trying to uncover things and really like find and solve big puzzles and make a difference, you're going to come up with ideas that are by definition very outside of the box and crazy. Right?
Because outside the Overton window, for sure. Yes.
Yeah. They are going to seem foolish and you will seem like just a doddering idiot to most people. Now, it may be the case like 8 times out of 10, 9 times out of 10, that is in fact the case. So what? You know, if you can just get one thing and pull the thread and solve one puzzle, great, you did it. You know, that's a win. And so I'm fine with people thinking I'm an absolute moron a lot of the times, so because I do try a lot of weird stuff around the lab. I've got like my project board over on the side. It's, if I read it, it's hilarious because there's some things that I'm working on that are just, they're kind of moonshots, you know, they're really strange ideas.
That's
and strange
where it comes from, right?
But that's it. Yeah, I don't
that's
mind
where
failing.
Innovation Yeah, innovation yeah. comes from shooting for the moon. You might land amongst the stars. You know, that saying.
That's it. Yes. And, you know, people, I probably do look like, I know a lot of my staff sometimes looks at the stuff that I'm working on. They're kind of like, okay. But every now and then, like I did a heat shielding technology a while back that is awesome. And I'll send you a video of it. You can post it because it's I coated an egg with it and it's about a millimeter thick. And I took a map gas torch when we first tested it and that's 3,730 degrees, right? So it's super, super hot. And I put two eggs, one just uncovered and one with the new heat shielding stuff next to it. And I hit the uncovered egg and it explodes in about a second. Like it just blows up. And then I hit the other one and I keep it on for over a minute and it's like glowing orange. Like in the video I was saying, you can hear me. I'm of course cracking jokes. I'm like, well, the egg looks great on reentry because it's glowing orange. And then when I take it off, it's still on fire. And if you listen, you can see the flames and then I blow it out and I count to four and I put my hand on it and it's already dissipated all the heat so much so that I can put my hands on it and hold it. And then I picked it up because I didn't know it was going to happen. And I cracked it and the egg was raw. And it was,
Wow, it didn't
it's,
cook.
no, it didn't cook. There was a little bit of transference because some of the protein, the white denatured a little bit and actually became kind of the solid white. So you don't see the slippery, slimy stuff moving anymore. It's just, but just a little bit of it. Most of it was just entirely untouched. And after being exposed to almost 4,000 degrees with a 1 millimeter coating for a minute, not too shabby. But again, it's part of the reason I crack up laughing while I'm doing this thing because you try a lot of stuff. Some of it works. Sometimes the egg blows up. Sometimes the egg is unharmed, but that's the thing. You have to get used to the idea that you're going to seem like a chump a lot of times. It's cool, no
It
harm, no
is
foul.
what it is. Well, I also want to talk. I only have a little bit of time. We both only have a little bit of time left, but let's talk about this spike protein. You have a better way of dissolving the spike protein, and it's
Yeah,
what?
so one of the things that seems glaringly apparent to me is that that's a problem. And I honest to God, I don't know why more people aren't talking about it because if you look in the little enclaves of, people like myself who are researching it and I know you have a lot of friends that are doing it, so you're exposed to the data. It's bizarre how many people are having issues with those proteins expressing and not going away and apparently propagating, right?
That's
And
right.
the biodistribution is such that it's moving all over the system. So it might have started out in one small locale, but then over time, it actually gets kind of a very vast biodistribution so that the entire organism is kind of blanketed with these things. So my take was that's a problem. We need to get that out of there. And in the absence of seeing it done really well, I just came up with some stuff. And you see a lot of it. So, I mean, I have no problem because there are other people. There's a friend of mine, Christian Elliott, who has a spike protein thing that he's working on. I know you have one on your site. And I have one that's probably slightly different than those approaches, but they all have some commonalities, right? So, I think we all have proteases, right? Because you want to break down a protein. What do you use? A protease. So, things like papain, bromelain, serratiopeptidase, natokinase, those kinds of things. But then some of the things that I'm doing that are a little different are like black seed oil with curcumin, and then black seed oil with C60. And then one of the common ones is, like I said, natokinase, which I think is actually really great in terms of breaking down spike protein. So if you do a combination of like natokinase, bromelain, black seed oil with C60, you toss in a little bit of curcumin, or you can even leave it out, some dandelion. And then one of the biggies is fulvic acid. So you can actually process the stuff out of your system because it does no good to break this stuff up and not be
That's
able to
right.
actually get it out.
And
And I think that's
isn't that what differentiates you the most, is you're getting it out of the system? Well,
Well, I
they're
don't.
not, a lot of these products aren't getting it out once they break it down.
Yeah, you can break it down, but if you don't eliminate it, it's literally like saying, oh, we're gonna demolish a house and just leave all the debris there.
Then what happens though if you leave the
Well,
debris? The spike protein debris that's been broken down and just doesn't flush it
so
out.
actually you end up with a lot of problems because the clearance isn't really good. So you can end up with, Herxheimer reactions where processing through your liver and kidneys, you end up with too much toxicity. It's akin to one of the things that in athletics I see a lot because I deal with, like top end performers and Olympians, is you see a thing called rhabdomyolysis, where there's too much of a muscle protein breakdown. Like if people work too diligently and they break too much muscle in the process of working out, it floods their system with all these proteins and it triggers a shutdown in end organ failure, basically. So your kidneys start to fail because the clearance rate, you can't process that many broken proteins through your kidneys. Now, if you buffer it with something like fulvic acid and say an activated charcoal or something like that, then you can take those particles at different sizes. And because you're looking at, when you break things down like this, they're not breaking the same way every time. Just like a good analogy is a building. If you demolish a building, there are going to be some chunks of debris that are very large and macroscopic, and then there are going to be some that are very small and microscopic, right? You've got to take everything out. So my estimation is you have to use compounds that handle things across a whole host of sizes. And so you want to have things that bind to larger macroscopic things, like say the fulvic acid and the activated charcoal. Then you want to have things that bind to smaller things like fulvic acid and carbon 60, because then you can bind. And you'll see a lot of that is the commonality there is carbon, because it's a great binding surface, which is why we use it so much kind of That's ubiquitously right. for detoxification. But you have to have it appropriately scaled so that you can take the different amounts of debris that happen, bind to them and get them out. And that, you know, renally and hepatically protects you so that both your kidneys and your liver don't get whacked in the process. And that's really great, because you got to clean the debris out. It's one thing to break it, but if you just leave all the trash in your body, it's still floating around. And the problem with all those spike proteins, in my estimation, is that when they aggregate, they start occluding systemic function, right? So if you, in a vascular sense, if you've got a ton of spike proteins aggregating, well, you're going to be blocking off the flow, right? So it's just like a hose getting smaller and smaller and smaller with the interior diameter. That doesn't do anything really good. It means there's a transient increase in your blood pressure, because, you know, you keep the same demand on the system, but you make a smaller pipe. Well, you've got to increase the pressure to get it through, you know? And so you end up with all these kind of downstream failures. So if you can go in there and eliminate this stuff, then you open everything up vascularly, so you don't have the same problems. And a lot of this is just me from my personal experience, like fixing my own heart. Like, what do you do? Right? Like, I couldn't. And the problem for me personally was, and I think we had talked about this when it went down, I went to my doctor here in Oklahoma and said, I got a problem. I can't breathe. I walk. I'm fatigued. I have to sit down. And he was like, oh, well, let's do an EEG. So we did that. Everything was fine. And then he said, let's do an echocardiogram. We did that. And he said, no, your heart's fine. Everything's good. I said, look, that's great. I'm glad the echo says I'm all fine. I'm not. I can't walk. Like, I walk half a block and I'm winded. I start sweating. I'm like, you can say what you want. I'm telling you, I'm not right. So I called a buddy of mine, an MD in California, Mike Gallitzer, who's a really brilliant doctor. He used to run one of the big hospitals there. And he's an MD, but he works a lot with electromedicine. He does.
So he's an evolved MD? Because I don't think MDs are all that.
Yeah.
All
truly,
that.
Truly brilliant. Yeah. Truly, and like one of the kindest men you'll ever meet, like just a good human. And he has all this electromedicine tech from Russia and Germany that he's been working with for decades. And in my opinion, he is probably the best diagnostician I've ever seen. Like, I flew out to his place. I called him and said, look, man, I'm having a problem. I'm hurting. Can you help? And he said, yeah, just as soon as you can get here, I'll help you out. And didn't charge anything, just fit me in to help me. And so I flew out, and I was doing a conference in Arizona. And as soon as the conference was over, I flew out to his place, and he hooked me up to all this diagnostic equipment. And in a matter of seconds, he said, oh, you've got myocarditis. He said, your cardiac tissue is inflamed. And he said, and the problem is the inside of your mitochondria have a viral load. And that's why you've got an issue. And it was minutes. He drilled down on that and got it in minutes.
That's amazing. And then that's why you came up with your product.
Yeah. Well, because
that's what you do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, granted, the C60, it helped, but it didn't fix it. It didn't eliminate it. And so the biggest shift I had was when I started taking a lot of natokinase in combination with the other stuff. And, you know, those things actually made a difference. So it was helpful. It wasn't, I mean, honestly, it's better now than when I did it, because it's taken a while to kind of figure out how to do this. And I really like drilled down in the past couple months on saying, okay, I'm going to crack the code on this, because I fixed myself, but there's still lots of other folks that are having problems. And I don't think this is the kind of thing where you can say, oh, I'm fixed, I'm done. I actually think that there's kind of a persistent cycling issue going on, where even though I'm ahead of the curve now and I don't feel like I'm having the effects of a long COVID, I think, could be wrong, but I think that whatever is encoded in my system is still there and is still providing the signal to make my system go offline, like to dysregulate. I don't think I'm clear. Like a normal virus, you get the antibodies, you're done, which is why back in the day, the very first time I got COVID, I was trying to get COVID, right? Like I actually wanted to get it because I thought, hey, there's a new virus. I'll get the virus. I'll get immune. Ah. You know, retrospect,
there's something. And the people that say there was nothing out there, I do know there was something out there, and there's evidence. People like Dr. Zelenko, who was right in the middle of it, there's something here. I mean, you just say that it was totally made up is BS. I think science too.
Yeah, if you look at like the clotting and all the stuff that's happened, you know, that people have very clearly identified, I don't know what it is, but I can tell you, I had never seen anything like that before. All those embalming guys that are pulling very large strings.
Well, I think a lot of that's from the jab. I mean, there's more issues here.
Yeah, I'm sure there are more issues, but prior to, you know, all that stuff in, you know, end of 2019, beginning of 2020, I had never seen anything like that, right? That's all kind of a new function. I wish we were able to openly talk about it, but I mean, we literally have to avoid using the terminology because we'll get completely shut down.
If we could openly talk about some of this stuff with top scientists, we can start solving it. Even like, does a virus exist, for crying out loud? We can't talk about all these things. I mean, for God's sake, why can't we talk about all this stuff? Because that's where the growth happens, is when we have these debates. And we start learning. And then the scientists like you that are like, okay, I'm not putting my ego out here. I just want to learn. I don't care. Just whatever. Stop. I just want to learn.
So I was at a conference with another scientist, a fellow named Greg Fahey, who is a really brilliant cryobiologist, right? He kind of cracked the code on being able to freeze organs and then thaw them and still have them viable to reuse them. And he also has a thing called the TrimX protocol, which is a life extension protocol. And since phase 2 FDA clinicals, it's the only thing that's actually legitimately shown in human clinical trials that has shown the signs of reversing aging across every metric they've checked. And Greg also, more importantly, if you look at him, he's like 73 and he can hit the ground and bust out like 80, 90 pushups, lickety split, no issues. And he looks like he's in his 50s and his gait is great. Yeah. And he's really like OG longevity scientist, in my opinion, but super, super good cryobiologist. We were at this dinner and it was a bunch of us who were, you know, really sharp guys in our given fields. And we were talking about genetic expression and we got into what I would say is an insanely heated debate to the point of everybody being loud and grumping and rah. And Greg pulled back. And this is, I think, what is needed to your point. He said, listen, we don't agree. And that's cool. But I want you guys to know, I respect and I love all of you guys. And it was such like, it was brilliant to me. Like
yeah,
that.
I mean, that's just what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Science like, should be
as
really full bore and arguing to the best of their ability, but being open enough to go, look, I respect what you're doing. I could be totally wrong. You could be totally wrong. Personally, I think you're totally wrong, but that's okay. I'll still respect you. And we'll figure it out. And that's like
healthy.
The current.
But you know what's happening now is, okay, you have that table of experts, take one of them. And now they're the only narrative that anybody can talk about. And all the rest of you guys are shut down. That's what they're doing right now. It's like, you can randomly just take one of you maybe not even one of the people at the table with some other dude that none of you guys agree with. Is what they're forcing down everybody's throat. It's dangerous for humanity.
Yeah, it is. I think you need the open intellectual curiosity and debate for people to progress, right? You have to have it. And if we could do that, if we could foster that as an environment, both just academically and commercially, right? To say like, and this is why I probably recommend people take other products more than they take my products, because the stuff I'm making is great for certain things, but it's not great for all things, right? There are things like people.
You're people trying to solve specific problems. They're solving another problem.
Yeah, like people write in, and because they're related, like one of the most common recommendations I give is omega-3s. Like I recommend people take omega-3s all the time. I don't make omega-3s. I always recommend a company called Perfect Health. They make omega-3 with astaxanthin. That stuff rocks. I take it every day. I took it this morning. I take 3 grams of it. It's great, but I will recommend that kind of stuff. And if you can have like an open, like I said, academic and commercial environment where you're like, look, this is what I think. I'll argue for that, but I could be wrong. And this is what I'm going to recommend for this. But if you need this, go get it there. Like that's how we fix things, is not just like, oh, you know,
that's
I have
right.
the one. It's like the one ring to rule them all. I have the one widget to rule them all. Bullshit. Nobody has.
That's right. Come on. Well,
yeah.
I do want, what I really want is, and I'm going to offer this to people, is you have three really outstanding products that are innovative, innovating beyond your competitors, innovating beyond, and you constantly, that's what I love about you is like, okay, my product's not good enough. Now I want to innovate. You're always innovating your products. And that's what I'm looking for. Cause it's like, wow, we got these new, you just identify a new problem. And so what we're going to offer people is what products that you recommend and how often you take it. And we will have all of the three that we talked about today, we'll have up there for people.
Yeah.
And you'll tell them what you think is the rotation and how to take these. And
yeah.
We'll have out, and there will be a link below and it'll be on my website under my shop page. And we're just going to start getting this out to people, these innovative. COVID's happened for a while ago. People are struggling in mass, a lot of death, a lot of sickness. And the innovation is what's going to get us out of this mess. So I'm just so pleased to have this partnership with you. So thank you so much, Ian, for joining the program today.
My pleasure. Happy to be
conversation.
Here. Yeah, happy to be here. And anytime I'm around, and I always tell people this, and now people are finally starting to do this, but it takes me a while to get back to everybody because I do respond to every single one of these personally. But if you have a problem or something, and I would hope that people that had the skill set would do this for me too, reach out. You can get me via the support system, support@wizardsciences.com. It will get to me. It may take me a little while to get back to you, but 100% I will get back to every person. Or you can reach out on Instagram at IanMitchell1. And same thing, I promise I will get back to you. It just may take me a bit.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Ian. I so much appreciate it. You are awesome. Thank you.
Have an awesome day. Bye.